My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
We were living pretty wild back then. I was probably in so much of a haze that I didn't really think about it too much. I was kind of living day by day.
This man has spent decades drifting between chaos and beauty, turning pain into melody and anger into art. He's the heartbeat of Deftones, the voice that makes pain sound beautiful. This is the story of Chino Moreno. Camilo Wong Moreno showed up on June 20th, 1973 in Sacramento. A kid with a name no teacher could say right and a face that didn't fit neatly into one box. His friends called him Chino, Spanish for Chinese. Half joke, half truth, as he was the son of a working class Mexican father and a mother whose roots stretched from China to Ireland to Native America. Growing up in suburban California, he didn't look or sound like your stereotypical future rock star. He wasn't shredding guitars or banging on drums. He was breakdancing to hip-hop beats and listening to Duran Duran.
The first song that I have the fondest memory of hearing as a child was probably Casey and the Sunshine Band, Shake Your Booty. I actually remember being like a toddler, maybe 3 years old, and like rocking out to that song, because Casey and the Sunshine Band is so metal. We grew up kind of in a, I guess you'd call it the hood, whatever, and that's all the music we were surrounded by, just beats. At that time, it was the late '80s or mid '80s as a kid, and everybody's cars driving by just bassing and bumping, and rhythm was a big part of what we did. So I guess I figured out I was pretty emo pretty early in my life.
Beyond the music and breakdancing, Chino was obsessed with skateboarding. In mid-1980s California, skating wasn't simply a hobby, but a whole subculture of its own. That's how he bonded with Abe Cunningham, another 12-year-old skater who happened to keep a drum kit in his bedroom.
I went to Abe's house for the first time. I think we were in seventh, maybe eighth grade. We were in junior high school. And I go to his house after school, a skateboard over there. And I go into his room. And he's got a little tiny room. I mean, it's, pretty small. But his drum set takes up his whole room. And it was his dad's drum set. His dad passed away when he was a couple years before that, actually. And he was in a band. He inherited the drum set from him. So his room was just the drum set, and then he had a little tiny like mattress on the in the corner, like where he slept. I don't even know if it was a mattress. I want to say it was just like blankets or a sleeping bag, whatever. But he sacrificed his like comfort, so it was like his room was just like his drum set.
Skateboarding and music, when we were met in junior high school, and him and I would sit in class, like literally, we had math class together, and we had like headphones with
we would split old earbuds,
old puppy
put one
ones.
Up. Yeah, we would sit like this,
slide the thing down to loosen
the
one,
and listen to records together and talk about them.
In high school, Chino and Abe met Stephen Carpenter, an older skater who played electric guitar and had a garage full of music gear. In that noisy Sacramento garage, with skateboards tossed in a corner and Metallica riffs echoing off the walls, Deftones began to form, though at the beginning it was only Chino, Abe, and Carpenter.
Abe was a drummer since he was a little kid. Stefan was playing guitar for years. Me, I wanted to play the drums, but I wasn't that good of a drummer. Abe was obviously a better drummer than I was, so I needed to find something to do. I wanted to be a part of something, create something from nothing, and I sort of taught myself to do what I do, which is, I don't know what it is, but I kind of just figured it out, and didn't really have any expectations to take it where I is today.
The trio jammed nonstop, sweating through the Sacramento heat until they sounded halfway decent.
So for me, I was introduced to metal really in getting into this band. And Stefan, our guitar player, he was one of the major writing, forces in the band, obviously, at that point. So his roots were metal, I would take little parts of his riff, say he'd have like a riff, but, he'd do something and it'd have some rhythm to it where I could feel like it could bounce and hop. And that's how we'd craft the songs. We'd just make all these little parts, these little rhythmic parts, and mesh them together into songs, and then I'd started to learn how to sing, and I'd kind of sing, all in and out of them,
And obviously, I mean, around that time, you guys
were... It was a good thing, it was a coming of age. I was pretty young when I started. I was 15. So I think it was just wanting to be part of something creative with my friends.
They went through a few lineup shakeups, kids drifting in and out, chasing other bands and so on, until Chi Cheng walked in with a bass and locked it down. And that's when Deftones really came to life.
Well, we're from Sacramento, which is Northern California, but it's close to the Bay Area, San Francisco. So a lot of what was going on in the Bay Area, Oakland and Berkeley, just that whole area, we were influenced by, which bands at the time, obviously Metallica is from there, but Faith No More, for instance. There was a lot of funk influence, from there too, which to us was kind of, our early roots, I think, musically come from a lot of different places, but one of the things that really is rhythm-driven, music, as far as we always looked at making riffs or whatever we're making that had you could nod your head to it, had, beat pulse to it, and that's from listening, I think, to early rap music and whatever. Why was
it exciting? In the beginning, Deftones played anywhere they could. Small bars, empty clubs, and plenty of shows where no one got it. Thing is, the California scene back then was built almost entirely on hard rock and punk, but this band didn't fit either. They didn't decide to be different to look cool, they were different by default. They genuinely loved a broad range of music, and it bled through in their sound. This made them oddballs in the Sacramento scene, but it would soon become their strength.
I kind of just stopped going to school. I was a senior, quote unquote senior. But we started playing shows, actually. And we started taking little trips from Sacramento to Oakland and San Francisco and just the outskirts of a town and playing shows. So we'd get back from playing shows 3 in the morning, and then I would just end up staying over at Cheese House. And then I'd wake up in the morning and be like, I'm not going to school today. My parents were actually going through divorce at that time too. So it was I kind of slipped through the cracks a little bit where in a way it was kind of, I guess I got lucky in a way because I got dive deep into music.
By the early 90s, Deftones scraped together a demo and finally started turning heads outside Sacramento. Then came the twist no one could have scripted. Madonna, the queen of 80s pop, decided she liked them. She just co-founded Maverick Records, and her team caught wind of the noise these kids were making. So they flew the band down to LA for a little test drive. Picture it, a sweaty rehearsal room and four kids from Sacramento giving it everything they've got while Madonna's team stares them down. And then, boom, the door opens, and here's Madonna herself. She shakes their hands, says she's in, and just like that, the deal's on the table.
And I didn't even know she was there. I went to go sit in my A&R's office, the guy who signed us, his name's Guy. And I was sitting talking to him and staring at face to face with him. The door's behind me and the door opens and he starts talking to her. I just hear a female voice and I look over and I look up and it's her. And then he's like, oh, this is my new artist, blah, blah, blah. And I was just freaking out because as like a 10-year-old in myself was just like, oh, my God.
And so in 1994, Deftones signed with her label. The irony was perfect. A metal band championed by the world's biggest pop star. But credit where it's due, Madonna didn't try to change them. She just believed in them. And this leap of faith sparked everything that came next. In 1995, Deftones dropped their debut, Adrenaline, on Maverick Records, and the name couldn't have been more accurate. The record felt like getting hit in the face with a skateboard, the perfect soundtrack for kids who skated in parking lots and drank cheap beer.
Mostly always angry, you know, or like our last record, our first record, Adrenaline, is more of an angry record.
It opened with Bored, a song that starts with a slow, moody bass line before erupting into a wall of guitars. It's tense, emotional, and unpredictable. A perfect snapshot of Deftones' early DNA, pressure, release, repeat. Chino's voice mutates from lazy drawl to screaming like he's fighting his own body. Engine Number 9 is a demolition derby. Carpenter's guitar sounds like a train gone off the rails. Abe's drums crash like they're trying to escape the kit. And Chino just loses it, barking and spitting through the noise like he's exercising something. It's pure chaos, yo. Punk, hip-hop, and metal smashed into one sweaty, beautiful wreck.
It's definitely the Deftones album that is the most nu metal sounding. It kind of goes in that style. There's some kind of hip-hop influences for sure on this one. And yeah, it just has this really aggressive, kind of like juvenile, adolescence, nothing held back nature to it that I love. They just kind of go all out with this album. They throw everything on it. And I will...
This was nu metal before the genre even existed and before it became a dirty word.
The sound of this record really, really heavily relies on these like very simple, simple guitar riffs, barely riffs. I mean, they're just chord patterns most of the time with like the bass kind of just doubling the guitars. And then the drums are really where the groove of the song comes from. These really kind of bouncy, like double time hi-hat kind of grooves, and then Chino kind of just soars around on top of the music with these floaty, airy vocals that are unlike many vocalists that I've heard of this era.
The sound of Adrenaline is a glorious mess, and that's the magic. Terry Date's production doesn't beautify anything at all. It leaves the dirt right where it belongs.
We'd hired him because of Pantera. At that point, those were like the heaviest, most like piercing great records. So we hired him because of that, but then we sort of like tied his hands behind his back because we told him, okay, we love this, but we don't want it to sound like Pantera. We just want to record it raw. So it didn't sound anything like a Pantera record, but it kind of sounded shitty.
The mix bleeds and snarls, guitars crashing into vocals, drums spilling over everything. You can practically smell the sweat. Chino tracked most of his vocals live, screaming into a handheld mic in the same room as the band. It sounds like a garage at 2 a.m. after a wild show. Amps buzzing, friends yelling, adrenaline still in the air. And that was exactly the point.
The music is actually a side effect of all of our friendships. I mean, that's just what we do as friends. When we all get together and hang out, that's what we do. If we're writing music, most of the time in our session is us just hanging out. I mean, we'll jam here and there, get into a couple arguments, smoke some weed, drink some drinks, jam some more, and be like, all right, I'm tired. See you guys tomorrow.
But when the album first came out, it didn't make headlines. Sales were small, reviews were mixed, and most people didn't even notice.
You know, we didn't have nothing to lose. We made our first record, and we didn't expect anybody to even like it.
But underground, something was happening. Deftones were touring constantly in small clubs, and little by little, they built their cult following. By 1997, nu metal was taking over. Bands like Korn and Limp Bizkit were mixing rap, funk, and metal into something loud, brash, and built for arenas. Deftones were often grouped with them, but they never quite fit.
A lot of the press wanted us to, you know, obviously they put us in the category, and our first instinct was just to kind of push it away, you know, because to me it was like when they called it nu metal, for one, I was like, well, if it's new, you're putting the word new in it, it's going to be old, like, you know, in a couple years. And then again, it's hard for us to get a, you know, you look at these other bands and, you know, there's some great bands in that movement or whatever it was. But each to each was his own, you know what I mean? I always felt like we were our own kind of thing. And, we weren't put together under any kind of preconceived thoughts of what we were going to be. We just are who we are. So I wanted to be Deftones. I didn't want to be, you know, a part of all this other thing, you know what I mean? So
their music had the downtuned guitars and hip hop flavor, sure, but they also had a subtle and very unique sense of depth. Their second album, Around the Fur, proved it. It was heavier, darker, and way more emotional than most of what was out there.
That's my favorite record. We were at in the prime of our lives. I think I was 22, 23 tops. The mindset for us was just like, we made our first record, which was successful, way more successful than I thought it would be. But the fact that we got a chance to make a second record on a major label, I felt like, wow, if everybody liked that, we're going to make something that's just like way beyond that. And I feel like we did that with that record. We stretched our influences, everything. It just like stretched out from that point.
First question that pops up is, why the title Around the Fur?
Well, I was thinking of a it was like our music. I picture it as being, very ugly, you know, heavy chords, you know, and everything's really abrasive, and the music is really, but at the same time, it's really soothing, you know. I think a lot of my melodies and a lot of the vulnerability that I put myself in when I sing are extremes. And and just something I was into, I think I picture fur as being really glamorous and very beautiful, but around in the inside, it's skin, and it's somewhat ugly. So it's somewhat of a metaphor for the music and just of the way I feel sometimes about people, you know, being really pretty on the outside and ugly on the inside.
I was probably angrier than I've ever been in my life, but I was probably happier than I've ever been in my life. On every emotion, it was like the pinnacle of all those emotions. And that record was very dynamic for those reasons. Like some of the saddest parts on that record are really sad. Some of the angry parts on that record are, I don't know if I can ever be that angry again. Fuck, I was mad.
The album opens with My Own Summer, Shove It. And from the first second, it's clear this is something new. The song is a masterclass in controlled chaos. Chi's bass growls low like an engine. Steph's guitar slices through it like broken glass. And together, they build something that barely holds itself together. Chino rides that chaos like it's second nature, crooning one second, losing his mind the next. Listening to it now, you can tell how this song would later inspire Linkin Park for their making of Hybrid Theory.
They took all of that energy on Adrenaline, they polished it up, they made it a little bit darker, broodier, dirtier sounding, and they made Around the Fur. And this album is just on a level I can't even describe. This album is perfect. It's kind of nu metal-ish, but there's definitely elements there that make it its own distinct genre. I can't really describe exactly what genre this is. It's just awesome. That's all I know.
And I think a lot of people don't credit our second record enough to where it really like opened up from being what was then nu metal or whatever the new genre was that we were just kind of getting thrown into. I really think we started separating ourselves from all our peers on that record.
This was the takeoff moment. Around the Fur blew the doors open, and suddenly Deftones had the spotlight. They toured nonstop, sharing the stage with Korn and Limp Bizkit, and earned a rep for shows that bordered on riot. By now, the lineup was locked. Chino, Steph, Abe, Chi, and Frank Delgado, the quiet sound magician who'd gone from background contributor to full-time member. They were in their mid-20s, living the dream and absolutely wrecking themselves doing it.
Come on up. It's our front lounge here. It's where everybody hangs out when we have day drives. It's rare we drive in the daytime. We usually drive at night. We play a show. Basically got about maybe an hour and a half to get all our things together, put them on the bus, and then we're out and we sleep. And this is where we sleep. Come on, I'll show you. Before that, it's our laboratory, which, you know, can't throw any solids down there. This is where we sleep. These are our bunks. Curtains closing, open and close.
Which takes us to June 2000 when Deftones released White Pony.
By the way, £16 for an album.
That's a lot of money for a CD.
It is.
But luckily, you're getting something very good when you buy this. White Pony. It's the best album out right now.
To me, this is where Deftones transcended their nu metal roots and situated themselves as a band that would be arguably still making the highest quality albums and remaining relevant to this day, as evidenced by recently apparently selling out Madison Square Garden. Another powerful record from start to finish. Of course, it is going to perfection.
If Adrenaline and Around the Fur were beer-soaked basement brawls, White Pony was a fever dream. Dark, sensual, cinematic. It didn't sound like anything from the nu metal circus. It sounded like escape.
There's such a sinister tone to White Pony that I love. It's a really chilling album.
Did you feel a lot of pressure? Because there's a lot of pressure from other people. Did you feel a lot of pressure yourselves?
Nah, I make music that I like to make for myself anyway. So, the record label really has never been too, in tune to what we do, artistically, really. They just kind of just let us do what we do, and once we make a record, then they go out and give it to the people, but we just basically just do what we do. So the whole time we're making the record, it was stressful, but, it was just trying to get the most beautiful songs we could possibly come up with, and through a lot of the beautiful songs, there was a lot of, little areas where, it would just get hectic and crazy, but we just try to keep it all beautiful, and we did. And to me, the record, it's really moody record, but it's like a audio hug. That's the way I picture the record.
White Pony felt revolutionary from the first listen. It moved seamlessly between extremes, the explosive rage of Elite, which earned them a Grammy for Best Metal Performance, and the shimmering melancholy of Digital Bath and Change in the House of Flies.
What changed in Deftones' life after winning a Grammy in 2001? Something new, something bigger after Best Metal Performance?
Nothing at all. It's nice. It's a very big, in the States, I guess everywhere, it is a really big thing to get that or to whatever, but
Did you expect it to win?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, everyone that was, that was invited to the thing was sitting on the ground, and we were sitting up in the seats. So we said, there's no way, of course, they said they put us up here, there's no way we're, But then they announced the names and everything, and we jumped down, we jumped down, 10 feet down, and then we ran up, and, it was very quick and very brief, but it's a great thing, but nothing's changed.
The haunting duet with Maynard James Keenan on Passenger was proof that Deftones had transcended metal and stepped into something timeless. Critics went nuts for White Pony. Suddenly, Deftones were being hailed as the Radiohead of metal. Like Radiohead ditching their early rock sound for something more esoteric, Deftones had swerved away from the nu metal template into something artful and introspective.
The band was sort of fighting a lot during that record. That was their third record, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's usually the time when, we put on the road together a lot. A lot of external pressures going on. Maybe drugs involved, all the things that contribute to anxiety. And then you throw everybody into a heavily creative situation where you're trying to outdo your last really creative situation. Anyway, there was a lot of arguing, but with those guys, it was like brothers arguing, it would get elevated and heated, but they would always hug afterwards. So
Behind the scenes, though, the White Pony era had a darker underbelly. The band members would later call it a cocaine concept album, and they weren't speaking metaphorically. As the nu metal scene hit its commercial peak around 2000, Deftones were riding high, literally and figuratively. Living in a Hollywood Hills party house while making White Pony, they had ample access to every rock star vice and developed a prodigious drug habit.
Who's got mushrooms? Who's got fucking...
Anybody got mushrooms?
Anybody?
Yeah. Let me get one, just one.
Come on, man.
A skim.
Can I get a cap? One fucking cap? There you go, you got some...
Nobody?
Oakley's. How about some ecstasy? This is a big ecstasy fucking crowd, right? Come on.
You guys been given the keys to Sacramento.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do with that?
Snort some drugs off it.
Cocaine became the fuel that kept the creativity going until it started to derail everything. In classic rock and roll fashion, the highs of White Pony would be followed by a crash. After the artistic triumph of White Pony, Deftones were on top of the alt metal world. But success can be a hell of a drug, and in their case, literally so. By the time they got around to recording their self-titled fourth album in 2003, A Brooding Heavy Affair, the band was dragging some serious baggage. Years of brutal and relentless touring, substance abuse, and simmering tensions were finally catching up with them. And Chino in particular was in rough shape.
We were living pretty wild back then. But I was probably in so much of a haze that I didn't really think about it too much. I was kind of living day by day.
He'd become addicted not just to coke, but eventually graduated to a speed habit once coke no longer did the trick.
I mean, not that I didn't make good music, like, you know, being altered here and there, but and a lot of great music has been made that way, or with being influenced by mind altering substance, whatever. But the fact that, you know, you go through your whole life, because I was pretty much since high school, I've been, you know, like I was telling you earlier, just drinking beers and whatever. I never made music, you know, without that.
Chino's weight gain became a visible sign of what was happening behind closed doors: exhaustion, excess, and the creeping effects of drugs and alcohol abuse.
I'm a person who likes beer a lot, probably a little too much.
Interpersonally, the band was at a breaking point. This new album had some killer songs, the sweeping single Minerva for one. But the process of making it was strained. Still, they pushed through that album and tour by inertia. And the real crisis hit during the making of their fifth album, Saturday Night Wrist, released in October 2006. By then, communication among the band members had basically collapsed.
It kind of started out, I'd say, during the making of that Saturday Night Wrist record. And, you know, that was a very tedious process, a very long process. There wasn't a whole lot of communication, I think, going on between us. So it just took a long time to record that record. I mean, we did it in pieces, and you know, like one person would record a part, you know, a couple weeks later someone would come in and record their part on it. And just the way the record was made, I mean, actually, I'm very, very pleased that that record came out as good as it did, considering the way that it was put together and the, you know, the lack of communication that we had. But
there are plenty of rumors on the internet that Deftones would break up. Was it true? Almost, yeah. But, you know, I mean, like you said, it's just... How close you were for breaking up? About...
On top of that, Chino's drug problems were causing not just weight gain, but also issues with his once impeccable voice. Years of screaming incorrectly, plus late-night partying, had inflamed his vocal cords. And at one point, he even suffered partially paralyzed vocal cords and had to cancel some shows.
I paralyzed one of my vocal cords. And you know, they go to the doctor, they put the camera up your nose and down your throat, and they show, like, they have you hit these notes. And I was just watching my vocal cord on the screen, just not move. Yeah, not move at all. So there's a chance that, you know, I could not sing again, whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
What is it? What goes through your mind when, I mean, because that's how you make your living, doing that.
Yeah.
What went through your mind at that point?
It's kind of like a wake-up call, like, oh, I better start, you know, taking care of myself, you know.
Chino would go missing during recording sessions, literally vanishing to work on a side project in the middle of making the album. That side project was Team Sleep, an experimental dream pop slash trip hop group that Chino had been noodling with on and off since the White Pony days.
It's just a project I've been working on for a few years now. A lot of my friends that I grew up with, you know, we've all been friends along with Deftones. They all know, everybody knows each other. And when I'm not working on Deftones stuff, which is rare because I'm usually always either on tour or in the studio, but the spare time that I do have, I spend it making music, and these are my other friends that I make music with when I'm not making music with Deftones.
In retrospect, it's easy to see why he fled to it. Team Sleep's music was mellow, electronic, and drenched in chill vibes, kind of on the opposite spectrum of the pressure and conflict he was feeling with Deftones. It was like a trial separation in a bad marriage.
Okay, what took so long, the recording of the new album? I know what everybody's saying, so...
Yeah. I don't know, I think we were unhappy with the way it started out, you know what I mean? The way it started out fine, then towards the middle of it, though, the record process, it just wasn't really coming together the way we wanted it to, or it just wasn't that inspiring, I think, so... For me personally, I kind of just needed to step away from it for a little while, and I think that's when I went and did a Team Sleep thing, and I took a little break from it, and I think just took a break from the band in general, and kind of came back with the thought that, you know, we all had to kind of talk to each other and realize if we really wanted to make this something special. It's always been something special for us before, and if it started to become not fun, then why do it? You know what I mean? So I think we had just wanted to see everybody's a break from it. You know what I mean? Did us really well. You know what I mean? We've been touring pretty much 10 years straight, you know, and so to have a little time where we just kind of step away from the whole thing and then look at it in a different light, you know.
Although the album limped to completion when it finally dropped, it actually received decent reviews and featured some fan favorite tracks like Hole in the Earth or Cherry Waves. But behind the music, Chino was a wreck. He had married Celeste Schroeder in 1994. When the band was still playing small clubs in Sacramento. Together they had two children, but as success grew, so did the distance. Long tours, addiction, and the strain of fame slowly eroded what they'd built. And by 2006, the marriage had ended. That pain seeped into tracks like Anniversary of an Uninteresting Event and Cherry Waves. The sound of a man realizing that the cost of the ride might have been everything he loved. Truth is, the rock and roll lifestyle wasn't kind to his relationships. Chino doesn't air a lot of personal laundry publicly, but it's easy to imagine the toll that endless touring and drug abuse took on his family life. By 2007, the band members were barely speaking, and the band's future was murky. The turning point came in an awful, unexpected way. A real tragedy that served as a shocking wake-up call. In November 2008, as Deftones began cautiously working on a new album called Eros, tragedy struck. Chi Cheng was in a car crash so brutal that he was thrown from the vehicle and suffered a massive head trauma that left him in a coma.
We went up to our studio in Sacramento, California, where we have a rehearsal recording studio that's been there for, I don't know, over 10 years, and we started working on a record, and we were probably almost maybe a year into working on it, almost finishing it up, when we got the news of our bass player being in an accident. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it kind of, you know, it halted everything. We stood back from the project, from the band, for a while. And
one day, the band was jamming and arguing over riffs. The next, their brother was in a hospital bed, unresponsive and fighting for his life. The Eros sessions were immediately shelved. Nothing seemed important except Chi's recovery. In the years that followed, Chi remained in a semi-comatose state, alive but distant. The band waited, hoping for change, but time moved slowly.
Didn't really think at that point what we were going to do with our future. But once we did, probably about maybe 4 or 5 months later, when we decided to reconvene, we all, the rest of the band, got together. And I think instead of trying to figure out if we were going to finish this record or who we were going to get to come in and find a bass player, before we even thought of all that, we just really wanted to just, I think, play together. So the first thing we did was we called Sergio, who's a good friend of ours, who filled in for Chi once before when he was hurt.
Friend and fellow musician Sergio Vega joined on bass to help them continue. It was a quiet, uncertain chapter where grief could only be soothed with music. In the middle of all that pain, something good happened. The band came back together.
I really felt like at that point we started to really rebuild our friendship.
The tragedy had shaken them, but it also reminded them what they meant to each other.
Once again, this whole incident, I mean, it's kind of reaffirms what we already know about, you know, just life is so short. We all know that, you know, things happen all the time in the blink of an eye. And it's definitely brought us, we're brothers, and we're best friends, brothers, we had over the years. But I mean, it's just, man, it's really made everyone just spark, you know, connect again and been having a blast, so.
With Sergio Vega now in the lineup, they started fresh, writing new songs that became Diamond Eyes. Proof, once again, that somehow pain always finds a way to force creativity out of you.
Despite, you know, what we're dealing with, our bass player being, you know, in his condition and not being able to be with us on the road, it's actually, you know, I think we're just putting all our energy into what we do in the music. And having Sergio, who's the guy who's filling in for Chi, he's an awesome dude. He's like family to us. And he sounds really good, man. He's an awesome bass player.
You know, we just buried our heads into the music and you know, started a whole new project. And I think we kind of felt like we really had to rebuild our whole foundation of our existence, really. I mean, kind of had to start over from scratch, and kind of helped us, I think, escape the reality of what was going on and just, and just focus on something completely new and creative. I think although Chi was heavy in our brains while we were doing it, I think, it was really good for us to get to that point in our lives and just really have us appreciate, you know, the fact that we're still alive and have our health and we're able to make music. So that's what we did. And about a year later, we finished up the Diamond Eyes sessions and we're very, very pleased with it.
Also, Chino got clean. Maybe not Saint level clean, but cleaner. And the difference was obvious. Diamond Eyes emerged in 2010 like a phoenix out of wreckage. Still heavy, still sharp, but glowing with something new. Hope.
We really had a blast making that record. You know, we over the years, it's pretty well documented that, you know, records for us, making of the records just, you know, got pretty tedious. And that's old news at this point. But I mean, we with Diamond Eyes, we really just we adopted a new way of doing it, and we just really became efficient and we were able to just pop things out, you know, not even rushing them, but we just working well, and communication was back, all these good factors that are important in the recipe when you're trying to be creative, you know.
The title track and Rocket Skates had that early swagger again, the sound of a band remembering how to feel alive. And then there's Sex Tape, a shimmering romantic drift miles away from the macho metal garbage that some rock stars regurgitate to look cool. So Chino was finally in control of his addictions, Diamond Eyes signaled renewal, and the rejuvenated Deftones didn't slow down.
When we were done writing the songs for Diamond Eyes, we were like, man, I can't wait to make the next one. You know, we had to go out and tour on that for a year, year and a half. So we did that and came back and took a month off and went right. We were so excited just to have that newfound that love of and efficiency. It was, you know, good stuff.
The band dropped Koi no Yokan in 2012, an album that further cemented their second life. It was majestic and darkly beautiful. And that was also the year Chino remarried, this time to Risa Mora, marking a quiet turning point in his life. After years of turbulence, this relationship felt steady, grounded. Together with their daughter, they settled in Bend, Oregon, trading the chaos of Los Angeles for open skies and quiet. For someone who had spent decades searching for calm through sound, Chino finally seemed to find it in life itself. But the joy was bittersweet. Tragically, Chi never recovered, and after more than 4 years in a semi-comatose state, he passed away in April 2013.
What is the status of Deftones now then? Everyone's still together. Obviously, there's a death in the band.
Yes.
But everyone else getting along and still together and going to move forward and put out another record eventually?
Yeah, I mean, since our bass player, his accident, that was, I want to say, in 2009, we put out a couple records. I mean, since then, obviously, took some time off, you know, obviously, but... But yeah, we're just we've all been friends since we were kids, man. Lucky enough, I've been able to make a career out of it, you know.
So, yeah. Where did you grow up?
Chino Moreno's creativity was never meant to stay inside one band, and whenever Deftones slowed down, he didn't, and created new worlds as a creative outlet. It all started with Team Sleep, the hazy, dreamlike project that became his safe space when Deftones nearly split in the mid-2000s. After years of silence, the group resurfaced in 2015 for a Woodstock Sessions recording. Not so much a comeback as much as a cleanse. An opportunity for Chino to revisit those foggy late night sounds with a new maturity, a clear head, and a calmer pulse. We should also note that in 2011, he was diving into darker waters with another side project called Crosses, alongside guitarist Sean Lopez and bassist Chuck Doom. It was Chino in full dark synth mode, pulsing electronics, moody beats, and a sensual goth energy straight out of an 80s fever dream.
So how did this project all come together? Like, what was the motivation?
All in the band, Sean, guitar player, we grew up together in Sacramento, and he actually is my neighbor, or he used to be my neighbor. I just moved, he used to live like a few blocks from me. So I would ride my bike or ride my skateboard over to his house, and he has a studio at his house, and we started just making some music, you know, kind of just happened, you know. We didn't plan it. It just happened.
If someone has never heard Crosses before, they know you, Chino, as the lead singer of Deftones.
Yes.
People probably very familiar with Deftones. What's the difference? Compare and contrast the two bands.
Well, it's different people. It's not as guitar driven, I would say. I mean, there are guitars, there's a lot of organic instrumentation, but it's not, I guess it's not as aggressive in certain ways. You know, Deftones is very guitar driven, you know, so this has a little bit more synthetics, and there's keyboards and, you know, electronics.
Are you still screaming as much with
Probably
Crosses?
Not as much, but I mean, there's I slip a little in here and there.
You actually...
Then came Palms in 2013. Heavy in atmosphere, light in aggression, full of slow tides and sky-wide guitars. Critics called their record one of the most artful metal releases of its era. And Chino seemed completely at ease, just singing, floating, and letting the music carry him.
And now this Palms project, which is something that we recorded a record probably a little over a year ago, and really haven't done much. I mean, you know, I've obviously been busy doing a lot of stuff. So we were able to get everybody, you know, in the same place for a week or two. And so we're trying to play, I think we have 5 or 6 shows, and mostly, you know, here in Texas, which is the great state of Texas where, you know, we'd like to be, I guess, where I like to be.
All these side gigs weren't distractions. They were pressure valves, just different ways for Chino to feed the same creative hunger that powers Deftones. Every project, from the digital pulse of Crosses to the oceanic calm of Palms, added new shades to his art. He follows his muse like it's a survival instinct, and fans get to watch an artist who never flatlines.
Feels very gratifying to know that we can sort of take our time making our music and feel that people will be there when we decide to come back, and in those numbers it's great. I mean, you know, I think we're very privileged to be in that, you know, to be at that level.
When Deftones released Gore in 2016, Chino's creative muse sparked some internal tension. Stephen Carpenter initially resisted the softer, more atmospheric direction Chino and Sergio were exploring. Yet even in disagreement, the band's foundation held. And at the end of the day, that push and pull and that balance between chaos and connection has always fueled Deftones' best work.
You know, now it's like we can kind of breathe, you know, in between record cycles and take our time making the records and not feel pressured that people are going to forget about us if we take, you know, 3 or 4 months more than anticipated.
In 2020, Deftones teamed back up with producer Terry Date, the man behind their early classics, and released Ohms, their 9th album. It's a record meant to be taken slow, layered, thoughtful, and endlessly replayable. Ohms hits right away, but gets deeper every time you listen.
You know, it's got its moments. I feel like with Deftones records, we've always tried to have sort of a dynamic, you know, flow in our records where it kind of, you know, goes from here to there and, you know, within a song and as a collective piece of work. So I feel like all those things are there. I'm excited though for people to hear it and really dig into it and get out of it. Basically let the music sort of present itself to them and whatever. Like, I'd rather not just sum up like what you should feel when you hear it, but I definitely think it's an emotional record. It was made before pre-pandemic, whatever, but I really feel like there's a lot of stuff on it that really, really mirrors kind of like what a lot of people I think are going through right now as far as just dealing with all this isolation and lack of connection. And I feel like that rears its head a few times with Dispatch of Songs for sure.
In 2022, Sergio Vega walked away from Deftones because after all those years, he was never made an official member. He'd been on a contract, gig to gig, and eventually that didn't sit right with him.
We met in 1995. I filled in for Chi, rest in peace, in 1999, and was asked to work with the band after his tragedy in 2009. Because of the love they had for Quicksand, I was asked to bring the same approach as a songwriter and arranger to them as well. I was also told that similarly to Frank, I would be brought in over time to become an official member. I had worked with the band for 12 years, and at the start of every album cycle, I asked about becoming an official member, but the contract would be improved instead. COVID was a breaking point for a lot of people, and I started to question my place in the band and the future that I wanted for my career. I really started to need something stable because at that point, my contract with them was canceled. One day I got a call from the guys about an internal band situation, and they asked me if I was solid and that I would have to fly out to LA to help work it out right away. I said, of course, I was all in and we can handle my situation later, but I can't go back to my old contract. Our respective management had a conversation to discuss a new contract, and they offered me the same deal. At that point, it was clear there was no opportunity for growth for me, so I declined the offer. And then I called the guys immediately to see where the miscommunication was to resolve it, but there was no response. A couple of days later, I received an email from their lawyer that their offer was withdrawn and that they wished me the best. So I left the band early last year, and since then, I've been focused on my band Quicksand, as well as working as a producer and writer for other artists and projects.
Deftones quietly brought in Fred Sablon. No drama, just another smooth transition for a group that's seen everything. Thing is, their status as avant rock icons isn't about constant reinvention. It's about endurance, patience, and authenticity. The world eventually learned to hear what Deftones had been saying since the beginning, that heaviness can be tender, that emotion is power, that beauty can surface from pain. Green Day and Foo Fighters may draw larger crowds, and Korn or System of a Down may hold nostalgic sway, but only a few from that generation still sound this alive. Deftones outgrew their moment and defined their own forever. Fittingly, in 2025, Deftones dropped their 10th album, Private Music. The record feels like Total Command, a band that knows exactly who they are, but still finds new corners to explore. They twist heaviness into softness, sadness into beauty, and somehow make it all hit harder. Because evolution doesn't have to mean compromise. Chino's story was never a straight climb. It's a landscape of peaks and valleys, triumphs and heartbreak, creation and loss. That he's still here, still creating music that feels vital and alive more than 30 years later, speaks to something deeper than talent. Today, he has nothing left to prove. Yet every time he walks on stage or steps into a studio, you can sense that spark, the same restless drive that started it all. Whether it's the fury of Deftones or the dreamlike haze of his side projects, one thing remains. There's only one Chino. He can roar with anguish and whisper with tenderness, often in the same breath. He's lived every lyric, bled every note, and he's still chasing the next sound, still crafting the next melody, still writing the soundtrack for what it means to really feel alive with all its pain and beauty.